Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here, fully suited. Emmanuel Acho.
You know, I have to get comfortable, bro. We're doing 90 minutes today, bro.
I thought you
were 90 minutes today.
Did you make a brand off of being uncomfortable? What the hell? You're going to get comfortable? Oprah, he tripping. All right, let's get it started with the Patriots. He mask off, too. Let's go with the Patriots who are entering the post-Tom Brady era with new quarterback Cam Newton. He's battling Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer for the starting job. He was even taking 13 reps when training camp started last week. That might seem like a negative, but Bill Belichick praised Cam's work ethic recently. Take a listen.
He's worked very hard. I'd say as all of our players have, certainly for all the quarterbacks at that position, those guys have been locked in, been focused, have worked extremely hard, all four of them. Everybody has a lot of confidence in, you know, in what they're able to do and the information they have to give to the team, play calling, adjustments. Audibles or, you know, protection adjustments, things like that. Like that's all gone pretty well. Cam's a hardworking kid. He really is.
Damn, how old are you, Bill?
Oh,
kid?
Man.
You think Belichick sold on Cam?
Absolutely not, bro.
Not?
No. You remember, Marcellus, I don't know if you've ever played a game called Mafia or any other murder mystery type of game.
What?
And early on in the...
Is that a video game you're talking about?
It's not. It's a real person game, right? Face to face.
What do you mean? You're killing real people?
No. It's a hypothetical murder mystery game, Marcellus. Let me get to my point.
Okay.
You're playing this hypothetical murder mystery game, and you're convinced of one thing, right? You might be convinced that Marcellus is this hypothetical killer. Then you realize, wait a second, you had it all wrong. That's where I'm at, Marcellus. I was using my bias to lead me to believe that, oh, you know what? Cam is the incumbent starter for the Patriots.
Okay.
Cam Newton is going to be the man. It's just the
smart
Patriot way.
Mm.
But then, Marcellus, I started realizing I have it all wrong. Bill Belichick's not sold on Cam, and I'm not sold on Cam in New England. And I'm not because you don't refer to a grown man.
Oh, here we go.
Heisman winner, NFL MVP, 6'5". 250 pounds is a hardworking kid.
Mm.
You don't refer to somebody who you respect in that manner as a kid. Let me tell you, Marcellus, what did Bill Belichick say about Tom Brady?
What year?
Sometimes in life, it takes some time to pass by before truly appreciating something or someone. Tom is a special person, the greatest quarterback of all time.
Kid.
Not a kid.
Kid. Yeah,
okay?
Yeah,
so, no. You don't refer to somebody like that as a kid. So I'm not sold because Belichick's not sold. I don't think this is any longer the Patriot way, Marcellus.
Ooh.
I actually think the Patriots got Cam for cheap because they view him as somebody for cheap. The Patriots have him as a third stringer, not because it's the Patriot way, but the Patriots view Cam Newton as a third stringer. You have it wrong, sir. I just figured it out before you did.
Damn. Not bad for a hardworking kid like yourself, Morgan. No, that was coming. I've seen too many analysts. We talk about active players, and we sometimes say kid or young man or whatever like that, which I understand is different, but he's not Belichick's age. Tom Brady's Belichick's age, so that's why he didn't call him a kid. They're the same damn age. But when you're looking at Cam Newton, you're looking at him from these eyes. You're looking at Cam Newton from a respect point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Being an opponent, he's lost twice to Cam Newton, saw how amazing Cam Newton was as an opponent. And then Cam Newton started to trip. And I'm not talking about just in how eccentric he became, but his game started to trip. Like, oh, that's not the same dude. What is going on? So your mind can start racing even if your legs are not moving.
Mm-hmm.
Your imagination takes over. The first lazy assumption for anybody who's watching another player who used to dominate and now can't stay healthy, and even when he's out there doesn't look the same, is he's not working hard. So Bill Belichick's in a position where he doesn't have a ton of information, but he's looking for affirmation. I need to be affirmed that that's the same Superman that I remember losing to a couple of times. And then he gets him into the New England Patriots organization. And then he starts to watch how he works, how he does his Zoom perfectly centered in that box, how he does his work, his intel, his processing skills. Hasn't seen him in too many competitive environments in practice yet. They ain't put the pads on yet. But he's like, damn. This dude can internalize and digest with the best of them. With that type of ability, maybe he is the same guy who just had a stroke a year and a half of bad luck. Affirmation.
Here's my problem, Marcellus. You were speaking higher of Cam Newton. I, the person who planted the Cam Newton flag on the hill, is speaking higher of Cam Newton than Belichick ever has. See, you say guys are hardworking. You use adjectives like that when they lack the adjective you want to use. Right? It wasn't, oh, his football IQ was off the charts. It wasn't, oh, his play calling and digesting acumen is unparalleled. It was, he's a hardworking kid. You see, Marcellus, if you get into a relationship and she lacks the adjectives you're looking for, you'll be like, yeah, but she has a great personality. Or you'll be like, I mean, nah, he's not very attractive, but girl, he make good money. You see, a hardworking kid, Marcellus, that's the only adjective that Bill Belichick had for me? No. You have to start reading between the lines. You, Marcellus, were doing what I was doing, right? Okay. You thought Cam Newton was the starter, so everything that you saw was going to lead you to believe what you already wanted to believe instead of believing the actual truth.
Wow. State school strikes again. I'm not mad at UT. They tried to teach you, and you just didn't listen. What is the name that you call a baby goat? What do you call that, sir? What is a baby goat called? It's called a kid.
I'm not going to entertain
you. It's called
you
right a kid.
Now.
Maybe Belichick's kind of trying to sneak one in. Belichick in, like, a little over your head or maybe under your feet. Either way it goes, it got by you. You outthought yourself. You're outthinking yourself. I'm going to give you another example. Poor UT. I'm sure they taught you this. You just didn't pay attention. There is a gut head relationship. Mm-hmm. There is an intuitive cognitive relationship. And they have proven, scientists, people at the UT lab, I'm sure, have proven that the intuition response is up to 6 million times faster than the cognitive response. So what does that mean in layman's terms? That you can feel something, but then you can start thinking about it and think yourself out of it. Get a little too cute up here. Mm-hmm. And that's what you did. You even admitted at first it felt like Belichick was
giving up. Like,
you know why? Because that was the truth. Stop being so cute with your thoughts. Stop being so articulate with your words. You're a great kid. You work hard. But the thing is, Belichick, who never says anything glowing about any player, actually spoke out of turn to give him his props. Even if it's this much, in a Belichick world of context, it's that great. Let's move on to college football, something he knows a lot about.
Kids.
A bunch of kids out there. Which made headlines when the Pac-12 and Big Ten canceled their football seasons for the fall because of the pandemic. Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields, beast, took matters into his own hands and started a petition over the weekend requesting the Big Ten immediately reinstate football in the 2020 season. The petition has already had well over 200,000 signatures. Along with the petition, Fields tweeted, quote, "This cause is close to my heart. Please sign." So, Acho, to the Big Ten, listen to Justin Fields.
I'm going to get to your question in a second, because here's what I got to do first. Shout out to Justin Fields. Shout out to realizing your power. Shout out to realizing your authority.
Real talk.
Shout out to understanding that, wait, as a quarterback of a top program, I can move the needle.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
Heck no, the Big Ten should not listen to these kids.
Give it.
You shouldn't. Because you got 240,000 signatures. Amazing job.
Yeah.
But unless these 240,000 signatures are from medical experts, then these 240,000 signatures mean nothing to me. Because they could very well be by 240,000 trolls that you and I deal with on Twitter every single
day. All day.
So
every day.
I don't really care about 240,000 signatures. And the NCAA can't, or it undermines everything they've said. The NCAA said, Marcellus, we do not believe it is in the health best interest of our players to play ball. So now if 240,000 people say, well, we want them to play, that has nothing to do with what the limiting reactant. The limiting reactant was health. The Big Ten is not playing football because the players didn't want to play. They're not playing football because the coaches didn't want to play, coach. Yep. They're not playing football because the parents didn't want their kids to play. They're not playing football because they said it was a medical reason. Medical reasoning is the limiting reactant. So unless a medical reasoning changes, the Big Ten quite literally is not allowed to change their stance. The last thing I'm going to say on the matter is this. We ain't never listened to the college athletes before.
Uh-oh.
Because let me get this straight.
Huh?
So if you get 240,000 signatures saying you should pay these athletes, all of a sudden they're going to get these checks? That ain't the case.
That ain't
so,
it.
So, no, the Big Ten shouldn't listen to the players because they never have before.
Broke that down. Not much room for me to wiggle.
There's some meat on that bone.
There's some meat on that wing. Hey, I lost 5 pounds in the last 2 weeks, so, you know, I'm going to find my way, get skinny in the hole, as Coach used to say. Find me a way to chew on some of this meat on that bone. Here's the thing. Justin Fields, I love you. Admirable what you're saying. Admirable what you're doing, using your platform and garnering all this attention and signatures. But this is not realistic, brother. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to happen. When the rubber meets the road, there will be no actions, no change of actions from the Big Ten. Why? One, eggs on Twitter ain't going to get it done, brother. I mean, who are these dudes that are signing this petition? I don't even care if you give me some names. And there are a couple of names, even some retweets. Herschel Walker I saw out there. They're tagging our president in it. Doesn't matter because I didn't see leadership from the Big Ten. I didn't see leadership from Ohio State, AD, head coach. I didn't see those people speaking out on this same matter, signing this same petition. So it's going to fall short. Now, why is it admirable? Because he's using his voice because he knows he's a big name. And he knows he's pro-bound. He's top five, probably locked in. Why is this not realistic? Because playing my favorite sport growing up was track and field. Still is. But that's not the first sport. I started off as a golfer. And your hoo should be even louder because this is in the 70s, and I was out there, me, my daddy, Smokey Robinson, and Calvin Peete. Look it up. That's it. Only four brothers in the whole golf complex. And I remember one time my dad watching me out there putt. Then, you know, you get your little driver, little fake flimsy shaft, and I'm like, oh, I hit the ball 10 yards, 20 yards, 30. Daddy, I'm going to swing really hard and hit it so far. And my daddy's just sitting there chuckling. Boy, the harder you swing in some things, the worse it gets. Mm-hmm. Justin Fields is going to learn a hard life lesson, that he's going to swing hard for this opportunity for the Big Ten to reinstate football. But I think it's going to be a bad miss because there's no way you get a situation like this back on track without the leadership in your circle.
You talk about leadership. You hire experts to make expert decisions.
Yes.
These 240,000 people, along with these college athletes, aren't experts. Mm. Marcellus, you have children. You've told me about that.
You told the world
about that. If you make an educated decision based on your higher level of intellect as the parent, it does not matter how much your youngest sits there and whines and, daddy, 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 but I want to. Mm. No, you have made a calculated decision based on what's supposed to be in the best interest of your children. Mm. The Big Ten commissioner, I don't necessarily agree with it. I know several people don't agree with it. But nonetheless, he's been put in this position of power. If y'all put him there, that's on y'all if he shouldn't be there. But they have made him, along with the medical experts, have made a calculated decision based on what's in the best interest of the player. It does not matter how much you kick and scream, the players, y'all can't overturn this. Because here's my last thing, boy. If you were to say, well, 240,000 signatures say that players who get concussions, they want to play through them. At what point do we draw the line?
Yeah.
You're a player. You're an athlete. You have a dominion that you can rule over, but it also has a line and a limit. The medical experts and the coaches, they have a dominion they can rule over, and that has a larger jurisdiction right now than the players in these signatures.
Talk about it, and let's embolden how that line of demarcation between where you can go and where you can't go. And the experts, the Big Ten commissioner, the AD, the chancellor, the school president, all sitting there, and let's be real and address the elephant in the room, which is the liability that comes from this. So even if their hearts are in the same place as Justin Fields, which I'm sure it is, they can't put everything at stake, at risk, to roll the dice in a situation that can become pandemic outbreak on their campus, on their watch. So when you look at a situation like this, I think it's actually, and this is going to sound like I'm jabbing his intentions, it's kind of smart in terms of the martyrdom that's going to come from this. Oh, you know what? If there's going to be a sword I'm going to die on, it's going to be on the sword of we should be playing football. Even if we don't play football, I'm still a top five pick and I'm out of here. And it's actually advantageous for him not to play. Like, if all the signatures that he's going to be able to garner, there should be one he can't. His own. If I'm Justin Fields, I'm sorry. If he were my son, I'm saying, big dog, kid, why are you playing college football? And he's going to give me all these reasons. And I'm going to say, but you know what? The first goal, remember when we talked about this a few years ago? Your first goal was just to be in the program and make a name. Then it was to get on the field and then make a name. And then it was to, hey, let's make all conference. All-American. Let's get high in the draft choice. Let's become a top pick. Let's become a top five pick. Brother, climbing this Mount Everest, you can see the summit right there. I understand you want to plant the flag exactly on top. But damn it, you are in arm's reach. Do not risk it all for this. Coming up, Dan Snyder and the Washington football team made history today with a new hire. We'll tell you what to make of it. Plus, at the top of the hour, the Bucks are bending over backwards to pump up Tom Brady. I'll tell you why I don't like it. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai. Here's the thing about home security companies. Most trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, and lousy customer support. So while there are a lot of options out there, there's only one no-brainer, SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe's got everything you need to protect your home with none of the drawbacks of traditional home security. It's got an arsenal of sensors and cameras to blanket every room, window, and door tailored specifically for your home. Professional monitoring keeps watch day and night, ready to send police, fire, or medical professionals if there's an emergency. You can set it up yourself in under an hour. Just peel and stick the sensors exactly where you need them. No technician required. And there's no contract, no pushy sales guys, no hidden fees, no fine print. All this starts at $15 a month. I'm not the only one who thinks SimpliSafe is great. U.S. News & World Report named it the best overall home security of 2020. Try SimpliSafe today at simplisafe.com/speak. You get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. There's nothing to lose. That's simplisafe.com/speak.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's move to the Washington football team, who's had a very busy offseason, including a name change. Now they can add front office to the list of changes. Washington hired Jason Wright as their new team president. Wright becomes the first black president of an NFL team. Adam Schefter tweeted some background info. Wright spent 7 years as an NFL running back. He earned his MBA with high honors from the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. He became a partner for the global strategy and management consulting firm McKinsey & Company, and now he's president of the Washington football team. Mm. Joined now by the big bro, LeVar Arrington, Marcellus as well. But, gentlemen, I got some things to get off my chest, so I'm going to go ahead and kick this one off.
Okay.
I've been reading the tweets, Marcellus. I've been seeing the tweets, LeVar, and so many people are saying, well, maybe Wright was hired only because he was black. Maybe so. But when I look at the NFL, I think about two things. The majority of NFL people are hired because of nepotism and cronyism. You hire your friends or you hire your family. So when you think about why you get hired, my biggest question is, what do you do when you get the job? I think about a coach like Cliff Kingsbury, 35-40. That was his record. That was his head coaching record. Hired as a head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Did he deserve that job? Absolutely not. But he kind of looked like Sean McVay, and Sean McVay had just gone to the Super Bowl. So, yes, you hired that man. When I think about the NFL, there haven't been much diversity because the NFL hasn't historically been diverse. So how can you turn that? Maybe they did hire him because he was black in Washington. The Washington football team, name change, has gone through a lot of turmoil. But as I see it, if we are ever going to try to elevate the game by elevating the level of diversity, sometimes you have to make hiring changes like this. Gentlemen, I'm reminded of 2003, the Rooney Rule. It was implemented that mandated that any head coaching vacancy, you had to at least audition. You had to interview a minority candidate. Just 4 years later, we see Lovie Smith and Tony Dungy, two black head coaches in the Super Bowl for the first time. Statistically speaking, there was less than a 4% chance that you would see two black head coaches in the Super Bowl. So what does that tell me, and what should that tell you along with the rest of the world? That when you increase diversity in the game of football, you increase the performance. So I have no issue, and I'm actually gleeful of the Jason Wright hiring, regardless of why they made it. Now it just matters with how well is he going to do the job?
You said a lot of strong points there. I just want to edit one word, because you kept saying maybe when you know damn well he got hired in part, largely.
I can't say it. Okay. I can't say it.
I can. Okay, my turn. This box. Hey, he got hired. He can check every other box, but he checked the most important one right now, because it's raining black men in this country. It's raining brothers all across the land in terms of diversity. And he benefited from that. And I can tell you why I can say that definitively. And there's nothing wrong with it for those who believe that we need to create the imagery, at least, of diversity, and then we'll figure out what his actions are afterwards. And that's the dividing conversation right here between the actions and what the intentions are of the actions. And my thought process takes me back to, let's go with the Washington football team December last year, when I don't know if a lot of people remember, but one Bruce Allen, the team president for 10 years, was fired. Now, December of last year, he's fired. There's a vacancy, not filled. But there was a head coaching vacancy filled right after that. And we know that as a person of color in Ron Rivera. But there's still no team president. And then you look into a scandal that hits them, whether guilt or innocence, but it is certainly a scandal that happened about sexual harassment in July. I don't know if this is properly reported or properly received, but as soon as that scandal hit, one Julie Donaldson was hired. You can talk about the intentions of that, but wasn't hired before the scandal hit, but was hired. Now, the Washington team that's been fighting tooth and nail to hold on to a racially insensitive, culturally insensitive title that we don't even say right now. And that told me a lot about the intentions of this front office, the intentions of their owner and Dan Snyder. The fact that he didn't even fully engage in that conversation, let alone didn't move off of the name change until all of the sponsors, including FedEx, started to drop out, started to take the money back, and then force his hand. But what comes right after that? After that scandal, one Jason Wright is hired. Now, Jason Wright has the credentials, not in terms of being an NFL front office executive. And we've seen, what, three other former players become what Jason Wright is, with John Elway, Matt Millen, Mark Murphy. Those are the three with tremendous experience and become team presidents. So I think Jason qualifies in that. It's just the matchmaking of using his complexion in the midst of controversy that has me feeling that this is a little affirmative action need.
You know, I think you guys have both made great points. I covered this team for 6 years when I went into DC media, and I am on note, on record, being very critical of the organization for a lot of different things that they've done through the years. I don't have a problem with this hire. I actually like the hire of Jason Wright. And I don't need there, as you would usually say, Marcellus, I don't need there to be a qualifier for this situation. I am hard on them when they have done things incorrectly. So I should equally be as I guess, appreciative or high on decisions that they make that I feel make a difference. I think this is a difference-making decision that this team has made. So many times as a society and a culture, we get so sidetracked on giving the reasons as to why the things are being done that represent change. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just be happy that there is a change, people. Like, we have been in the streets protesting. There have been riots. There has been looting. A lot of things have taken place because of social unrest and the injustices that we've seen. We've asked, we've called for more Black coaches. We've asked, we've called for more front office people to be included, the inclusion ratio. We talked about the Rooney Rule. I think when you see a hire like this take place, I don't look at Jason Wright as a Black man that is been hired. I look at Jason Wright as the right man that has been hired. And so to me, I think it's a great opportunity. I hope and I pray that he takes full advantage of this opportunity, but I also commend Dan Snyder. Yes, I am fair. So I commend him for this hire because at some point with all of the criticisms that have come his way, all of the judgments that have come his way, if he does decide to make a decision based upon where we are currently in society, so what? Maybe that's what needed to happen during the days when Martin Luther King was marching and people were getting beat up and getting hosed. They were doing those things so that we would see hires like this take place. So I'm not going to condemn it and say there's some hidden agenda. I don't care if there's a hidden agenda. There is progress being made, and he's been the right person hired.
LeVar, let me back that up. Because so many people are wondering, like, oh, well, I don't like if somebody's hired just based upon their skin color. We hear that sentiment a lot. Let me put you on game. most NFL personnel is hired because of their skin color. It's just inadvertent. Jason Wright, who'd he replace? He replaced Bruce Allen, who Marcellus already alluded to.
Yeah.
Well, Bruce Allen, who was Bruce Allen exactly?
A professional
son of George Allen, okay?
There you go.
Who's Bruce Allen? Son of George Allen. George Allen, legendary Redskins coach who took the Redskins to their first Super Bowl.
You
think that had anything to do with it? Of course it does. Now, could George Allen have been black? No, because George Allen coached in the 70s. There were no black coaches back then. There were no coaches of color. So if the majority of NFL coaches, owners, et cetera, currently exist in their positions because of those that came before them, well, if only non-black people, non-people of color existed before them, then they're going to pass that baton on to people that look like them. So if I look at it, Marcellus, I'm like, how do we change the matrix? How do we throw a wrench in that? You have to incentivize people to make decisions they otherwise would not want to make. So I don't really care so much as like why somebody gets hired, because historically speaking, the reason the NFL is predominantly white, I believe the NFL is 91 or 92% white when you talk about these top level execs, it's because it's always been white. So how can you find a way to change things? By making hires like Jason Wright. I don't really care to get into the nuances of is it fair or is it not, because the NFL, when you talk about hiring and firing, it ain't never been fair.
Okay. I'm not disagreeing with y'all on that. I'm disagreeing with the fact that there seems to be a lack of ownership of why this is the reality right now. I'm not a by hook or crook type of person in terms of, I don't care, as you said a few times, I don't care how we got here, just as long as we're here. I actually do care. Because one, I want to make it repetitive. I want to replicate and duplicate this success. I want to carbon copy this experience.
But how can we?
But this is how you can. If it's truly merit-based, then you know that it can happen. Now, nepotism is a different conversation than affirmative action. It just simply is. Now, we could go down that in the next block, and I'd love to do that. But I'm just saying right here that something is being hidden in plain sight, and I just want to have the ownership of it. I want to make sure that we understand that we may be putting cosmetics and makeup on the situation that really hasn't truly changed, even if it looks different. Fine. If you guys accept that, I accept that. I'm not mad at Jason Wright. I was there in Dallas when Stephen Jones was going up the ladder, and I knew who Stephen Jones was. And trust me, you cannot dismiss the criticism because it's happening to our people. Because Stephen Jones heard a lot of criticism and probably still does. But the point of it is, the ownership in that moment is to take that criticism, let your work outperform anything that got you there or anything you can say by being there. Here's what's interesting also when you talk about this situation. When you look at it, even Jason Wright said this happened fast. Now, there's been an absence in that role for over 8 months, and Jason has been in Washington, D.C., but it all happened fast. And that's fine for you guys if you're saying, you know what, because it's a Black Lives Matter movement and because the complexion
has
changed.
That's not what I'm saying.
Well, whatever. All I know is if a qualified candidate was down the street 8 months ago, why did it all happen fast just now?
But do you actually...
You know the problem? Go ahead.
Here's my problem, bro. My problem is the NFL hiring isn't merit-based. If it was merit-based, Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, most prolific offense we've seen in the last decade, he would probably have a job. If it was merit-based, Cliff Kingsbury wouldn't have a job. If it was merit-based, Sean McVay, grandson of 49ers vice president of ops, wouldn't have it. Jason Garrett, son of longtime Cowboy scout. Kyle Shanahan, son of Mike Shanahan. I just don't know if it was merit-based, if all of these people that have prominent positions would have prominent positions. So I can't agree with the fact that the NFL's merit-based because it's not merit-based. It ain't never been merit-based. So how can you fix the problem if you don't go out of your way to fix the problem? For whatever reason, whatever your motivation is, Marcellus, how can you fix that issue that's not merit-based?
I'm going to answer that real quick. I don't care if it's merit-based or not in terms of the reality, where it lands. This is when I care. It's when people don't want the criticism because it's not merit-based. You right now, digging through Twitterville, as you said, you started off by saying, I'm on Twitter, I'm hearing what y'all saying. Look, if you're going to go down that road, you know, one, that's not a merit-based role. And two, that's not the acumen and that's not the intelligence that you should use to broadcast your emotions. But you can't play both sides. I'm fine with, look, if I own the NFL team, let me tell you what Marcellus Vernon Wiley Jr. is doing. Whatever the hell he wants to do in that franchise. If he likes to just sell hot dogs, he's going to be the highest paid hot dog seller. My thing is, you got it. My son is still going to hear criticism of why you getting paid so much to sell them damn hot dogs. My only thing and my only pushback is, hey, people, you want this moment, but you can't have it without criticism. Take the criticism that comes with
I'm with that. I can get with
that's
that.
That's all.
I can get with
Vernon,
that.
Vernon, understand this, man. All right? Vernon Jr., understand. Your points are well taken. I'm not disputing what you're saying is correct. What I'm telling you is if the decision has been made to put him and elevate him to that position, right? If we always have a problem, if we always are coming back like, well, it's more affirmative action than it is merit. You know, this is more, you know, we talked about the other day how everything within the NFL is all based upon discriminatory decisions, right? So, yes, there was discrimination that took place in making this decision. They probably felt this was the right decision to make at the moment in time that we're in right now. I don't think anybody's going to debate that. And I think people will take ownership over that. And I think the Washington football team will take ownership over that. To me, the biggest point here is that a decision has been made. It elevated a person that I believe is qualified for the job. And whether that job was left open and they weren't going to fill it or they were going to fill it with somebody else that wasn't included, to me, I think that we can argue that, we can fight that, but it still comes down to an original point that Emmanuel made is, what type of job is he going to do? What is Jason Wright going to do? Is he going to create inclusion? Is he going to hire people? Does he have the type of trajectory where he could almost put people like an Ozzie Newsome in place to start hiring the right people to make the decisions and make the right personnel moves? If he does that, then to me, that's what I'm more focused on. How you get in the door sometimes, it's trivial, even if it is related to race relations, it's still trivial to get in. If it's a nepotism, if it's
cronyism.
I like that.
Corona.
Well, it's Corona going on now. But however you get in the door, you get in the door. But it's the quality of what it is that you put out there once you're there. So now the ball is in Jason Wright's hands. It's in his court. To be able to further the narrative that this is merit-based, even though it may not have came in originally looking that way.
Yeah, in finality, in summation, I think we're all here together just in different parts, different slices of the same pie. Two scandals, two hires on the surface that either addresses these issues and shows the learn from those moments or panders to these issues and really is just surface. Like you said, we're going to figure that out based on his merits. Here's something that's never been tasked to a white team president, at least in my experience. Quote, Wright will be tasked with helping to change the culture in Washington. He's in charge of business. And already, if you notice this is what happens when they don't always want you exactly for what they're going to say out their mouth. We need you to do a little more than that. So this is where it lends itself to and leads itself to. His complexion will be used as a wedge buster for a very racially, culturally insensitive brand to kind of piece together all the collateral damage.
And that's an opportunity.
And that's a lot
to put.
That's my point. The opportunity is not as narrow as defined as we know because of who he is and what he is. He actually has to envelop
but
more than just
that scope. But that's never existed. It's never existed, though. That has never existed. So now that exists, he can redefine what that looks like. And that's got to be an amazing opportunity to have in front
What if you fail at that, the extracurricular, but you do what you're supposed
to do? He got the opportunity. Look, beggars can't be choosers. He got the opportunity. I'm just glad he got the opportunity. But look, y'all tune in tomorrow because we're going to talk to the man himself. Jason Wright will be joining us to discuss the historic hiring and find out what he has planned to get the Washington football team back on track. So I can't wait.
First, find a name. Can y'all get a name? How about that, Jason?
Good luck. Hey, how about this, Jason?
Damian Lillard led the Blazers to win in the NBA's first play-in game, but I'll tell you why this format should be a one-time deal. Next, Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Ooh.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's head to the NBA, who shook up tradition by adding a play-in format for the eighth seed. The Blazers beat the Grizzlies Saturday to earn the final playoff spot in the West and will move on to play the Lakers. Commissioner Adam Silver seems in favor of making this change permanent, saying, quote, "This is something we'd like to see stay." Joined now by Fox NBA analyst Slick Rick the Bucher. Gotcha, I'm coming to you first, big dog. Should the NBA keep the play-in series for the eighth seed?
No, bro. And the only people I feel like are asking for this, people on Twitter or Adam Silver. Dudes that ain't playing. That's who we're asking for this.
Hello.
Remember why it was such a, why it elicited such a positive, like, visceral reaction for us?
Yeah.
We didn't see March Madness. This was the closest resemblance to March Madness. Oh. Oh. Basketball on all day long. Upsets. They're staying in the same areas. That's what we got out of this. Also, remember what we got out of this. We hadn't seen basketball forever, so we was itching for that joint. Anybody got some hoops? Yeah. Anybody got some hoops I can watch? Anybody got some hoops? I don't care how I got to get it. Just give me some hoops.
Right.
That's what we was itching for.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Bruh, you already have 82 games. The more you have of anything, the less it means to you. I've been watching Marcellus move. I've been here for about 2 months. I've been watching my dog navigate. You see, when I only had $1, $10, $100, you're going to hoard it for your life. But see, when you see dudes like Marcellus, when you got way more than $10 or $100, you don't care about these little measly dollars because you got more of it.
What you talking about, Willis?
82 games, the more games you have, the less game each one means. But the biggest point, and this is why I'm going to drop the mic, the NBA already admits 53% of the teams into the playoffs. The first round of the playoffs are play-in games. You got 16 teams in the playoffs out of 30.
Right.
The NFL, you got 12 out of 32. So the one versus the eight seed, yo, eight seed, that's your play-in game. I don't need no more games, bruh. Stop it right now.
Hear that.
All right, first of all, Mr. OM, Oprah Money, is talking about somebody else.
No.
Right here.
There's no such thing.
I remember when... What? All right. Second part is, don't be afraid of change, Acho. Don't be afraid of change. Yes, the players always get the short end of the stick. We're always asking more of them when we have change. But the reality is, when I look at what the ramifications of this play-in game here were, they were all good. You had five teams. You had five small markets that all had a sense of urgency and a reason for their fan bases to get excited. And the way they played was dramatic, far more dramatic than anything I've seen in the last couple of weeks of a regular season. I'd ideally like to see to shorten the regular season and have a play-in game, but anything that's going to give me more meaningful games in the course of a season, I'm all for. But the most important thing is, generally the teams that are going to be playing for these last ones are the small market teams that have young players. As a result of this, you had Phoenix, Memphis, San Antonio, Portland, all of those teams, all small market teams, and now they have a reason to sell season tickets next year. They have a reason for their fans to get excited. And you had the development of their young players. Ja Morant and DeAndre Ayton and DeJounte Murray are all going to be better as a result of having played in these games. So I don't see the negative other than obviously you're playing more games, but what are you really playing? You're playing a couple more games. And it's not across the board. It's just certain teams that have a shot at that last seed or two.
I don't like it. There's a reason, as Acho said, that when they first proposed this, they were like, nah, son. And then Adam Silver's like, oh, I got this exception, this opportunity, a compromise season. Ooh, going to lab. It's time to experiment. And whop, let's play this out in the bubble. Here's the thing about the bubble. It's not a real sample size because the elements are not for real. This wasn't an 82-game season. You didn't take all 30 teams into the bubble. You only took 22 teams. And if you think about it, if you are floating around the eighth seed, ninth seed, you are sitting there like, man, I got 4.5 months off, as Acho says, starving for anything to eat. You think a saltine is a Ritz because you're like, oh, what the hell? It's been 4.5 months of basketball away from my life. Now I'm going to play. Fully motivated. You get out there and all of a sudden you're in a bubble and you're like, oh, we got a chance. That's not the normal situation. That's not reality. Reality is you're fatigued around the third, fourth, fifth month. You try to bring out next April a team that's ninth or 10th seed trying to fight to get into the eighth seed and see how intriguing that looks. See how energetic those teams look compared to when they had four, almost 5 months off. So I just want to highlight to everyone the difference between a good player and a great player. A good idea and a great idea. Consistent excellence. Mm. Look, everybody's touched the mountain here or there to even make it to the pros. But who can keep going up there, that second burst, that third burst, that fourth tip to the rebound? Who can keep getting up there and staying consistently up there? Once you try to apply this in an exceptional rule, an exceptional year, to next year going forward, you're going to see it fall flat on its face.
Let me say this, man, because everybody... I've learned to go against the grain at times, probably because I'm sitting with Marcellus. Everybody hyped the Phoenix Suns, right? Rightfully so. Oh, my gosh, 8-0 in the bubble.
Yeah.
I'm glad they ain't make the playoffs. Because if you go 8-0 in the bubble, that undermines the fact that you won 26 out of 65 games before you got to the bubble. The Suns weren't a playoff team. I'm glad they got eight great games. I'm glad Book showed us that he is straight killer on the court and can find a bucket at will. But you can't let eight games, nor one or two play-in games, completely undermine and devalue all the work that every player put in thus far. But if we want to keep it really real, fans, y'all already hate load management. Now imagine if you give teams, players, execs, even more of a reason to load manage. Because, hey, this don't mean nothing. Just ball out these last eight games. We saw Jeremy Lin play eight great games, okay? So I don't care about eight games. Come on, Slick.
Do better, Slick.
Look, Jeremy Lin gave us more than eight.
He gave us eight and got paid.
I get it.
Am I talking to two guys, former NFL players, whose sport just switched from a number of exhibition games to regular season games? You guys did play in that league, right?
Yeah, they did.
Why did they do that? So that you had more meaningful games.
They did that for the moolah.
Yes, absolutely. But I don't know if you guys have noticed, but the TV ratings for the NBA haven't exactly been skyrocketing. One of the reasons is because people are turning off the games because they don't mean something. This has a ripple effect. If you are, and this is what I want, is I would ideally like to see the play-in being the 7th through the 10th seeds.
Oh, Lord.
Because now, when you're the 6th seed, you have a reason to play at the end of the year.
That's what you want, so you don't fall into it. Y'all just want to fight to see who's going to lose to the 12th
team. What?
You just want to see the 7 through the 10 seed fight to see who can be the first loser to the 1 seed.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Highlight the bottom.
Hold on. But what have we seen? Are you guys going to tell me that the Portland Trailblazers aren't the best equipped team to go up against the Lakers? Yeah, it may be a landslide, but the reality is you're getting the best team to play the top seed. And that's what I ultimately want to see at the end of the year. And if we didn't have a play-in, would the Portland Trailblazers, because of all their injuries during the regular season, would we have seen them in that 8 seed? Probably not. Memphis Grizzlies would have been able to hold on to that, and it would have been a landslide in the first round. So this, for me, is you're going to reward the team that's playing best at the end of the season and ultimately is going to give me the best competition, whatever that may be, in the postseason.
Slick, you know on the periodic table, when you start looking at elements, you have gold, and you have fool's gold. I'm going to
start with right now.
You got gold and you got fool's gold. What the Portland Trailblazers have given us is fool's gold.
Yes.
Because you're not typically going to see in any other season an 8 seed as good as the Trailblazers. Mm. But why not? Nurk. You know the same Nurk that gave us 21 and 22 in the play-in game? He wouldn't have played if this would have been a normal season because my dog still would have been hurt. So what we've seen by this Trailblazers team is unique circumstances. They're selling us on fool's gold. The Trailblazers team, if they would have had the same bubble team, they would have already been a 6 or a 7 seed. They wouldn't have been a 10 seed trying to fight to become an 8 seed. We're looking at very unique circumstances. Again, it's recency bias. We've all fallen in love with this bright, shiny new toy, which is the play-in. But Slick, you better than that. Don't buy fool's gold, Slick. Don't buy fool's gold.
Yeah, Rick.
All I know is that this was more exciting at the end of this, whatever the circumstances are. I've seen too many situations where the best teams are laying down at the end of the year. That couldn't happen with these games because, and if you expand the seating like I would like, look, I'm looking to improve the end of these seasons because quite honestly, you get to April and most teams are just mailing it in. And that I don't think is fair for the fans or the corporate sponsors when it comes to the big picture.
I just want to end this back on the periodic table. I love you, Acho. I have fallen victim in my past to the fool's gold. I used to fall in love on date night. And let me tell you what happened.
So you a lover boy, I found
oh,
out.
Oh, hell yeah, telling. All heart. I run for fights, but I run to love. Let me tell you one thing that used to happen to me. All of my date nights, and I didn't find this out until like 4 or 5 years in the game and a few engagements later, that I used to have date night at the movies. Like, I pick you up, 20-minute drive to the movies, 2-3 hours of silence, sitting there, great movie. We walk out, 20 more minutes, back to the crib. May stay, may go. But point is, it was an amazing time. But you know what I started to realize? I didn't get to know her, and she didn't get to know me. We just got to know this movie, which is not the same as reality. Mm. So then I finally wisened up. I started to take them out, pick them up in the morning. Let's go to breakfast, hang around, drive around, lunch, hang around, dinner. Oh, she learned quickly. I picked my nose. I'm sorry. I learned quickly that when she walk in heels, her knees don't straighten out. I was like, what the hell? And that's where you get the intel. 82 games is when you pick them up in the morning, and then you hang out all day. If we ain't talking about that, we ain't talking about nothing.
Why did we even talk playing games? We should have talked Marcellus's dating history.
It's a problem. I'm going to say, man now. Coming up, a former NBA All-Star just called Damian Lillard the best player in the world. We'll tell you if we're buying the hype next.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's talk about hoops and Damian Lillard, who told everyone to, quote, put some respect on my bleeping name. Mm. Well, he definitely earned it. Dame has been the talk of the NBA, averaging nearly 38 points and winning the MVP award in the bubble. Former NBA star Stephon Marbury took praise even further with this bold statement. Let's take a listen.
Why didn't I talk about Dame Lillard being the best player in the NBA?
That's it?
Great question. Start there. Joined now once again by Slick Rick, but Marcellus,
yeah.
I'm going to start with you, bro, because I need to know. Mm. Is Dame Lillard getting too much hype for the Blazers playoff run?
He was not getting too much hype. He was getting the proper amount of hype before Stephon Marbury gave us that. And then now you're like, oh, come on, man. You're being excessive because not so much that he picked Dame Lillard, because Dame Lillard, to me, is a top 10 player in the NBA.
Facts.
Walking into the bubble, and maybe if he skipped the line a little bit because of his bubble performance. But what I really take issue with is that now we're going to have a timeline of criteria that's based on every 2 weeks. Hold on. The best player in the game cannot be judged incrementally on every 2 weeks, because I'm going to tell you about the top to the bottom in terms of the best players in the game.
Talk about it.
The best player in the game didn't even play this year. His name is Kevin Durant.
You're wrong there, but okay.
So the second best player hasn't played fully motivated just yet because it's not the playoffs, and that's Kawhi Leonard. The third best player is 35 years old and a beast, but he's only third. His fourth best player in this league is Anthony Davis, who's overshadowed by the third best, the GOAT. Michael Jordan, watch yourself. Steph Curry is fifth best, and he redshirted this year. James Harden is the sixth best, so wherever you want to put Damian Lillard is fine. Hard to leapfrog those names I just gave you, and let's not do it based on every 2 weeks and how they perform.
Marcellus, let me tell you what I hate, bro. I hate when people make outlandish statements like this, because now they force us to speak facts, and fans can misinterpret facts for trying to undermine Dame. Dame, greatness. Last 8 games, phenomenal. One of the best 8-game stretches we've seen in a mighty long time. But when Dame pulls up from the logo, let's remember, the only reason Dame is even allowed to think about pulling up from the logo is because Steph Curry made that the norm. Steph ain't retired. Steph's still in the league.
Hello.
Like Marcellus said, he just took that redshirt year. But I can't stand recency bias, bruh. Carmelo Anthony had the audacity to come out about Dame and say, yo, he's the top for me. I've never played with someone who's lifted a team on the court like that. I said, Melo, bruh.
Beast.
2012 Olympics. You played with LeBron. You played with Kobe. What are we talking about, bruh? Like, I just need people to get back into reality. Dame is a beast. If you want to say that Dame has the most heart of anybody in the NBA, say that. If you want to say that Dame is the best 6-foot scorer in the NBA, say that. Say whatever you want to say within reason. But as soon as you say Dame is the best player in the NBA, now you make us have to remind you all of the facts.
Mm.
Yeah, quick backstory information. So Stephon Marbury is anti-LeBron. So this is his backhanded way of taking a shot at LeBron James and suggesting that Lillard deserves this. But the question, and I'm not going to let Stephon hijack this, because the question is Damian Lillard getting too much hype for the Blazers run? And the answer is no, he is not. Best player? No, he's not, because he doesn't affect the game at both ends. Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, they're all better two-way players than he is. Now, this is what makes him different, and this is what makes him very comparable to Steph Curry, because Steph has the same issue. He can't impact the game at the defensive end. He's, in many cases, a liability. But there are no two better leaders, and with Steph out of the picture, there is no better leader in sports than Damian Lillard right now, because there is no one, and this includes Kawhi, LeBron, Giannis. There is nobody who is better at combining his ability to get his and to allow his teammates to excel. Nobody does it more seamlessly than he does, because if you look at this Blazers team and what they have done and how they've played, name the other all-star on that team. Name the other proven star on that team. It's not there. And Damian himself, he's a superstar because of his leadership, because his ability to get the most around him, not necessarily strictly on his individual game. And the only reason the Blazers are where they are is because collectively what they've done, what they got out of Melo, what they got out of Nurk, what they got out of CJ McCollum. It's been the Damian Lillard show at the end of games, but the reason they are where they are is because they've had a lot of contribution.
Hey, I wanted to just highlight that consistent excellence. And you just added another name when you said Giannis, the MVP, back-to-back MVP should be. That's seven names that it's hard for Lillard to even leapfrog. But I always talk about consistent excellence, because even when you're talking about the top 10 guys, you're splitting hairs in terms of their greatness, because they're all great. They're all black belts. But I remember being a beneficiary of this kind of Stephon Marbury caught up in recency bias. My first 2 years starting in the NFL, I went out there and I hit him in the head. I was out there beasting. And I used to hear conversations of how great I was going to become. I never internalized it. I was just like, look, I know if I keep playing like this and I stay healthy, things will turn out just fine. You know, I told you before, Acho, I was the 38th best player in the NFL, you know what I'm saying? Then next year, 44. I mean, top 52 times. And then what had happened was not another time ever. The only reason I bring this up, J.J. Watt, first 5 years in the league, historical numbers, last 4 years in the league. And can you stay healthy, big dog, please? The point of this is, let's not get caught up in just right now. The body of work matters most when you're talking about these discussions.
Hear my thing, Stephon Marbury, I respect you, because you sold your shoes for the cheap and pay less, and your boy needed some Starberries back in the gap. But my dog, you tripping with that one. Coming up in our big story, Tom Brady's new teammates are trying to pump up the GOAT to all his doubters. I'll tell you why I like it. Next.
Did I hear Payless?
What? Welcome to Speak for Yourself, Marcel Swiley, Emmanuel Acho in the building. Let's get it started with a big story presented by Hyundai and return to the NFL, where all eyes are on new Bucks quarterback Tom Brady. Brady's done it all in his career, but he did turn 43 earlier this month, which has made some question if the QB's velocity is still there. That's not a concern for one of Brady's new targets, Chris Godwin. Listen to this.
The last couple years, you've heard people on TV talking about Tom, and they love to talk about how, like, his arm is dying, or, you know, he's not what he used to be. And so, like, because of that, like, I was just expecting to see, like not that great arm strength or whatever, but, like, we get out and start throwing, and he's letting that thing rip. Like, he's letting it fly. Like, there's a lot of velocity in the ball, a lot of touch, and there's a difference, you know? And so I'm glad people are talking down about it, because I know the truth about it, and I'm excited about what's to come.
that music, though. Oh, Acho, you have an issue with Chris Godwin trying to pump up Tom Brady?
Man, I don't have an issue with it. He's just lying. You feel me? It's like he's in a new relationship now, and he has to do his part to make sure he coddles and caresses the ego of his new figurative lover. It's his new quarterback.
Ooh,
right?
I heard that.
He doing what he got to do. I got no problem with it. But Chris Godwin, just because you lying to the media, lie to me.
Oh, call.
Okay, because I'm reading between it. Okay. Right? First off, just statistically speaking, big bro, Tom Brady averaged 6.6 yards an attempt last year. 6.6 yards an attempt. Jameis Winston, he averaged 8.2, bro. So, Chris Godwin, what you're used to in your three prior years, you just need to realize you're not going to see much more of that. And I understand, like, yes, let's make sure Tom, he feels good about himself, but everybody knows Tom versus time. That's one battle that Tom gonna lose. So I have no issue with it necessarily, Marcellus. I just understand what's real and what's not, and I'm seeing through that.
Yeah, I'm seeing through it as well. One, Tom doesn't need this pumping up, this inflation. He's been through all the battles, all the wars, and come out more successful than any player in NFL history. So it's funny to hear this because it doesn't scream of perspective. Like, Chris Godwin shows me his birth certificate when these words come out of his mouth, because this is not Tom Brady at his peak powers. Like, if you really want to get into a measurables conversation, because it sounds like arm strength, velocity, all those things, those are tangibles. Like, the ball's ripping. You weren't alive in the NFL when Tom Brady was in his peak powers. 2007, 2008, those years. Ask Randy Moss if he went to practice tomorrow and watched Tom Brady. Is that the same exact Tom Brady? I think you might come up with a different answer. And who cares? Because the thing that quarterbacks lose last is their arm strength. Their legs go first, then their minds go, because I don't feel like preparing, I don't feel like the next training camp, I don't feel like going through the process. You get beat up mentally before your arm strength goes. I remember playing with Drew Bledsoe when he was retired. I think he was like 47, 45 at the time. And the dude was still throwing the end zone, But then you're like, so of course everybody runs up to him, dog, why are you still not playing? Bruh, the process retired me. So when you're talking about a guy in a honeymoon phase, that infatuation phase, it's hormonal. You got to respect it, that, oh, everything is beautiful. You don't realize that there's some warts in this situation. And he'll come to that realization later, but just not yet. For more on this, let's bring back our boy, LeVar Arrington. LeVar, you have an issue with my guy, Chris Godwin, trying to pump up Tom Brady?
First of all, we are Penn State. Shots out to Penn State.
Oh, we
always keep it real. So, no, I don't have a problem with him saying what he feels.
Alumni.
Here's what you guys missed in the statement.
Well,
that
alumni
he made.
Dudes.
You guys did not catch what he did. It was very sneaky. It was very subtle. You could hear him say at the end of his soundbite, it was a difference. There's a difference. All right? Now, he's not talking about Tom Brady's arm strength. He addressed arm strength earlier on in his quote. Mm-hmm. What he was addressing, what you guys failed to look
at. Uh-oh, we going here?
Is the, oh yeah.
James.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Okay, go ahead, throw him on out there, right? He was making the comparison between how it feels to get a pass from Tom Brady versus getting a pass from Jameis Winston. And that small little part of his quote makes it abundantly clear that Mr. Godwin has truly enjoyed getting the balls thrown to him from Tom Brady versus getting them thrown from Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with
you
that.
You had me, but now you ain't.
You ain't got me no more.
Got
me. Here's my thing, LeVar. The thing about y'all Penn State people, see, you never know what you got.
Go.
You never know what you got here until it's gone. You want to talk about Chris Godwin. He's a top flight receiver. He's a top-flight receiver because his quarterback was a top-flight passer when it came to mass yardage. Think about Chris Godwin, because we got the tape of Chris Godwin last year, and we got the tape of Jameis. Chris Godwin, you're not going to see this like you've seen Jameis threading the needle off his back foot 35 yards in between two defenders. Mm. You see, Tom Brady, he's going to have to deliver it to you on time and in space, because what you had last year, you took for granted. I understand there was some interceptions. I get all that. We need to talk
you got
about
a lot
that,
of that
right now.
You had me until you said
you
that.
You had me until you had 39 turnovers.
The thing about it is, Chris Godwin taking some things for granted, bro. That's how I know Chris Godwin's lying, because you're talking about Chris Godwin just went from one of the strongest arms in Jameis to one of the weakest arms in Tom.
LeVar.
Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you guys a question?
No. Yes.
Am I freezing up? Listen, here's my question I want to ask you.
No, you're just lying.
When you were at Texas, mm-hmm. when you were at Texas or when you were in Philadelphia, when you had the starting defensive line in front of you, right, when the A's went, when the first group went, right, did you know the difference between how you were able to make plays versus the plays you were able to make when they put the second and third group in front of you?
Absolutely.
Okay, Marcellus, when they had the twos and the threes going against you in drills, did you know the difference between going against the twos and the threes versus when you had to go head-to-head with the starters?
Bums. Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah. It was quite a difference, right?
Bums out my face.
This is where I am going right now is to say you don't have to be gassing up the truth and the reality of what you experience when you're out there on the football field or in the meeting room. You know what it is. You see what it is. You recognize what it is. So we don't have to sit here and cue up passes that two good passes that Jameis Winston threw.
It was the same pass.
We don't have
okay,
to
different
cue
angles,
him up.
Different angles.
It's the same guy, different angle. Okay. Same play, different angle. Okay. All I know is this. All I know is that Chris Godwin knows what he is seeing and what he's feeling from the caliber of player that Tom Brady is. And he made it very apparent, spoke it very well, very succinctly, very educated in his delivery of
now, Marcellus, can you go to break?
Yeah,
please?
I will go to break. Can you go to break? Air All-Stars. We in T-shirts and shorts. Who gives a damn? We'll see when the pass come on. Coming up, Baker Mayfield says he has a much better state of mind as he enters his third season. We'll tell you if we like it. Next, Speak for Yourself is presented by Hyundai.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's talk Baker Mayfield, who's trying to turn things around after a disappointing sophomore season. Baker said earlier this offseason he was going to move in silence, but then recently called out his critics. Make it make sense, Baker. Now, Baker's switching gears to changing his own mentality. Let's take a listen.
You know, just the past couple years have been a roller coaster of emotions and not nearly as much success as I'm used to. So I would say I lost myself, you know, not having that success, not finding out what was working. I think I tried different ways of, you know, trying to have that success and I didn't find it. Being myself, getting that alpha mentality back, you know, 2020 has not been real great. Mamba mentality, RIP to Kobe, but trying to get that and replicate something similar to what he had to lead these guys to where we want to go.
LeVar back with us from who knows where. But Marcellus, I'm coming to you first. Do you like Baker's mindset heading into 2020?
I don't, man. Big fan of Baker Mayfield, but bruh, he's starting to unravel right before the moment of truth. Ooh, like, he getting stage fright. Like, first of all, you can't cliche me to death and inspire me, big dog.
He did.
I've been in too many huddles, and I ain't even trying to hear it. And if you are going to say something, it better be that gas. Because if it ain't that gas, I'm on your, remind you, I can't curse on this show, I'm on your head. The whole offseason, his words been in the back seat, and he been riding actions first. Then he see where we're going, the destination. He tell the words, get out in front of me. Why, Baker Mayfield? You talking about the bar has always been so high for you. And you are a walk-on at Texas Tech. Now, I'm going to keep this locker room because this is a locker room show. If somebody walks on at Texas Tech, matter of fact, a double walk-on because he had to walk on to Oklahoma too. If you a double walk-on, where I'm from, we kind of like, you weren't the greatest guy because you don't walk on to opportunities like that. That's not Alabama. That's not Penn State. That was Texas Tech. Now, you made a ton out of your opportunities. I'm not tripping on that. But that's why you had me riding shotgun with you, Baker. But now you're getting
you're
a
out
little...
You out the car?
Man, let me out, Doe. Let me out. Doe, just like a boys in the hood. Because he over here is set tripping and sounds shook. I don't want my leader to sound shook, even though I think Cleveland's going to ball this year. Baker sounded like he a little nervous.
Hear my thing, Marcellus. I ain't riding shotgun. I'm still in the back. You feel me? I ain't out the car just yet because I'm going to give Baker some leeway, right? Go. I understand his mental's being messed up. I understand my dog tripping, but he's had four head coaches in three seasons. And really in about 2.5 seasons, he already on his fourth head coach.
Right.
I understand that comes with some drama. Lamar Jackson, he been balling. He only had one head coach. Sam Darnold, falling lesser, two head coaches. Josh Rosen, we ain't even heard of him, and he on his, like, third team and his third or fourth coach. So I understand it. With more uncertainty comes a more uncertain mindset. So I'm going to rock with you on that one, Baker. But the real reason I'm going to rock with my guy It's because he's going into his third year, Marcellus.
That's how we
you know, that first year, that freshman year, that rookie season, you might not get it. Then sophomore year, you're going sophomore slump. But by your third year,
shut up,
you got to have it figured out.
Ball
I'm
out.
Assuming that Baker going to figure it out. I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt.
He's crashing.
Listen, I used to go to a park called Kennywood Park back in Pittsburgh. It was a place you went to. It was an amusement park, had rides, roller coasters, stuff like that. They had this thing. It was the shooting game, the long shot, right?
Yep, yep.
And if you were there with your girlfriend or girls were around, at certain points in time during the day, it'd be like certain guys there that could hoop teams in high schools, colleges, they'd be shooting, right? You see their girlfriend with big stuffed animals.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
You know, and so you take your shot and you step up, you shoot. And I could just remember I would shoot. And people who would make them, they felt good about themselves. They you know, felt good. Their girl had the big old stuffed animal.
Oh, thank you.
But then it was the guys who missed. And then they would get pull out, you know, and I only went with $40, right? So one ball was $1. All right, three balls, $3. But if you bought four balls, you only had to pay $3. You get the fourth ball for free.
Yeah.
You know how many excuses I made for every single time I missed that shot?
What you say?
And I would shoot that bad boy, and it would almost go in, and then it didn't go in. And then I'd be looking at my homegirl like, man, I'm a win this for you. I'm going to get you this stuffed animal.
The rim's small.
What happened was the ball didn't have enough air in it.
Yeah, yeah.
The rim didn't have enough.
It got the two rims.
The double rim.
It got the double rim. I think they make the hole smaller on these rims.
I think it's windy.
Do the ball even fit?
The wind is in the way.
The ball don't even actually fit.
Oh, my hand's real slippery.
Y'all following me here. Baker Mayfield needs to stop acting like he's at that long shot shooting game and step up and man up and say, I'm dedicated and focused on being the best player that I can be. Stop making all these excuses, man, because we remembering how many beards and mustaches you did in one day out of one game, and you're showing the same exact deal with what you're doing now. I don't like it.
Well, look, Baker, I trust you're going to make it go swish. Coming up, there he is, Uncle Jimmy.
No toys.
There go that man, Uncle Jimmy.
No toys.
We're going to ask him what he thinks and if Bill Belichick is sold on Cam Newton. Next, speak for yourself.
He said mama mentality.
Swish.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's move to New England, where Bill Belichick called Cam Newton a, quote, hardworking kid. Ooh, Acho getting mad. After the Patriots' first few days of practice.
Kid.
Joined now by Uncle Jimmy. Think Belichick is sold on that kid, Cam Newton?
All right, so let me get this right. I'm supposed to feel bad for Bill Belichick because he done got caught up in a little entanglement, right?
Oh, no. Don't do
hey,
that.
Man, this is Bill Belichick's fault. He know he's old and he know he vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
He had no business looking at all them little suggestive photos and videos that Cam had been posting on the gram. Okay? Next thing you know, what he do? He done slid over into his DMs, done started having little private chats in the name of social distancing. And then what happens? The moment they meet face to face and have a one-on-one, look what happens.
Mm.
Cam turns his old ass out, hits him with that good-good. At ooh-wee, at one hit a quitter. And then you look, now Bill Belichick sitting up here lost in the sauce, sitting up here whooped. He's sitting up here PWP without the P, player whip without ever seeing the player play, drawing up plays he ain't never drawn up before. Now the players in New England is upset, knowing that if he goes back, he ain't gonna ever come back.
Hey, kids, put your mom on the phone. Hey, honey, never coming home again.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.